Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 20, titled The Rainy Season and Autumn. Today we will read texts 39 and 40. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The 39 is there? So, I'll read 39 myself and then we'll responsively read text 40. Shanai Shanir Chahu Pankam. Staryan Yamam Chaviruda. Yataham Mamatam Diraha. Sharirad Ishvanat Masu. Translation. Gradually, the different areas of land gave up their muddy condition and the plants grew past their unripe stage. In the same way that sober sages give up egotism and possessiveness, these are based on things different from the real self, namely the material body and its byproducts. Purport. The word adishu in this verse indicates the byproducts of the body, such as children, home, and wealth. Text 40. Nishchalambur abutushnim. Nishchalambur abutushnim. Samudra sharad agame. Samudra sharad agame. Atman yuparate samyan. Atman utparate samyan. Munir vyuparatagamaha. Munir vyuparatagamaha. Nishchala, motionless. Ambuhu, its water. Abut, became. Tushnim, quiet. Samudraha, the ocean. Sharat, of the fall season. Agame, with the coming. Atmani, when the self. Uparate, has desisted from material activities. Samyak, completely. Munihi, a sage. Uparata, giving up. Agamaha, recitation of the Vedic mantras. Translation. With the arrival of autumn, the ocean and the lakes became silent, their water still, just like a sage who has desisted from all material activities and given up his recitation of Vedic mantras. Purport. One recites ordinary Vedic mantras for material promotion, mystic power, and impersonal salvation. But when a sage is completely free of personal desire, he vibrates the transcendental glories of the Supreme Lord exclusively.
Trimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshulam Militam Yenam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanditamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. I feel myself absolutely unfit. I have no power, I have no right to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, especially in this assembly. I'm praying to all the Vaishnavas for your kind-hearted blessings on me. So again, text 39. We're reading the rainy season and autumn, and we're hearing how it's transitioning from rainy season to the autumn. Again, 39. Gradually, the different areas of land gave up their muddy condition, and the plants grew past their unripe stage. In the same way that sober sages give up egotism and possessiveness. So, the plants are giving up their muddy condition and they're becoming more mature, just like sages become more and more free of egotism and material desire. Aham mamatam, egoism and possessiveness. Diraha, the sober sages. So the sober sages are giving up their egotism and possessiveness. These are based on things different from the real self, namely the material body and its byproducts. So, how will we give up egotism and possessiveness? We can ask this question and we can start discussing From Bhagavad Gita, Krishna writes, where Krishna speaks, Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Shantim Richati. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Srila Prabhupada describes that this is the peace formula, to understand that Krishna is the ultimate controller, the ultimate enjoyer. All activities should be done as a service to Krishna. Then we can give up egoism and possessiveness and attain real peace. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, the greatest peace formula is simply this: Lord Krishna is the beneficiary in all human activities. What does the word beneficiary mean? It means the one who benefits. If we'll consider that I should act not for my own benefit, but for the benefit of Krishna, that is the greatest peace formula. Prabhupada writes, men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord, because He is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than He. He is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Svetashvatara Upanishad 6-7, the Supreme Lord is described as Tam Ishvaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be lords of all they survey, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. So the attempt is like that. I want to be the controller and the enjoyer. But material nature is so cruel that it always lets us know that this is not the actual situation. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. We don't want to get old, but we have to get old. We don't want to get diseased, we have to get diseased. We don't want to die, we have to die. These are some of the stringent laws of material nature. And even if you will say, I don't believe in God, still, you'll have to accept those stringent laws because you are not in control. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and all living entities, including the great demigods, are His subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. So, instead of trying to fight the bare facts that we are not in control, there is a supreme controller. We should serve that supreme controller. Instead of fighting those bare facts, we should surrender to them. And in that way, we can be peaceful. What did it say? Aham mamatam. We can give up egoism and possessiveness. There's a nice story in Lilamrita. One of the devotees asked, they were taking their morning walks with Srila Prabhupada. And so one devotee was asking Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, what does the spiritual master or pure devotee see as he walks through the park? He must be seeing something different, right? And so Srila Prabhupada writes, or Srila Prabhupada says, he sees Krishna. He thinks that these are Krishna's trees, and this is Krishna's house. He sees everything as belonging to the Supreme Lord. So someone may think, this is my tree, this is my house. Srila Prabhupada is saying, the pure devotee is seeing that everything is belonging to Krishna. So then the devotee continues, but if Krishna is everywhere, does the pure devotee see Krishna on the wall on the right, and then the wall on the left, or in the corner, or in between every atom? Does he see one form of Krishna merge into another? Where does one form of Krishna begin and take off from the other form? So he's thinking, maybe, you know, like we're seeing the deities, but maybe also in every atom, and on the wall, and here and there, and, you know, how do all these forms manifest in the vision of the pure devotee? That's what's being asked. Interesting question, right? How is he seeing Krishna everywhere? So what will Srila Prabhupada say? No, it is not like that, Srila Prabhupada said. Do you see my spectacles? Yes, said Upendra. So whose spectacles are they? Prabhupada asked. They are yours. Prabhupada pointed to his shoes. And what is that? Those are your shoes, said Upendra. Yes, Prabhupada said. Similarly, a pure devotee sees Krishna like that. Everything is Krishna's. This is how he sees Krishna everywhere. So generally, we're thinking, we have so many illusions in this world. We're thinking, I am this body. We are thinking things in this body, things in relation to this body, they are mine. This is my house. This is my family. This is, you know, these are my relations. These are my friends. These are my enemies. So the devotee and the standard of my happiness is I will enjoy sense gratification with these relationships, with these different possessions. So the vision of the pure devotee is everything belongs to Krishna. This is Krishna's house. This is Krishna's family. These are all the sons and daughters of Krishna. My possessions, they don't actually belong to me. Maybe they are in my care. I am borrowing them temporarily. But I should use them in Krishna's service. I should not exploit them for my own sense gratification. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he is also making this point in a very strong way. If we can see everything in relation to Guru and Krishna, we will not see it as meant for our personal enjoyment. When we wear blue spectacles, everything appears blue. By seeing everything in relation to Guru and Krishna, we come to see everything through divine vision. Everything will rightly appear worshipable. This universe is full of objects for the service of the master of this universe. Therefore, all objects are worshipable. If we are endowed with spiritual vision, we can easily see Krishna. Just as the mother who is meant to be enjoyed by the Father and not by me, the Father is meant to be served by me. Similarly, I am meant to serve and worship this material world, which is meant for the universal Father's enjoyment. If we actually take shelter of a spiritual master and serve him sincerely with love, we will certainly attain Krishna's service along with transcendental knowledge about him. So, the lower tendency of a man in the material world may be to see a woman as an object of enjoyment. So it's the Vedic culture to address ladies as Mataji. And here, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is giving an explanation. Why? Because the mother is enjoyable by the father, not by me. The mother is worshipable by me. I should worship and serve the mother, and the mother's relationship is with the father. And so if a man can cultivate that type of vision, then that will reduce the bad tendency to think of women as objects of my enjoyment. They are meant for Krishna's service. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati goes on, we have to act in a way that doesn't bring us into the association of gross materialists and women. Then we will be able to treat objects meant for Krishna's enjoyment as worshipable. Our service propensity will be awakened when we stop considering ourselves enjoyers of women and matter. When we are free of this enjoying propensity, we will actually be able to realize Krishna. Even after we accept initiation, if we continue to maintain an enjoying spirit, we are fallen. Therefore, I advise those who want auspiciousness to catch hold of their bona fide spiritual master's lotus feet and serve him as their life and soul. In this way, their perfection will be guaranteed. An obedient and faithful disciple never falls down. Devotees who are attached to the spiritual master's lotus feet will certainly attain Krishna's lotus feet. And what does it mean to be attached to the spiritual master's lotus feet? Well, one aspect is, everything is meant for the service of my master, not for my service. If we can see all material objects in relation to Krishna, then they cannot harm us. The world is full of ingredients for the Lord's service. If, however, we consider the Lord's paraphernalia as intended for our own enjoyment, our material attachment will increase and we will have to suffer material existence. So the devotee is not the enjoyer. He is also not the renouncer. He is seeing that because to renounce means it belongs to me. So the devotee becomes, maybe you could say, the best renouncer, because it is simply not in my possession. It is in the possession of the Lord. It is in the possession of my guru. Everything is meant for their service. So the plants are growing past their unripe stage. So as aspiring devotees, we may also be in an unripe stage. We may still have the mud of so much egoism on us. And so like these plants who are transitioning from the rainy season to the autumn, we want to give up this mud. And just the way that sober sages give up egoism and possessiveness. There's also we have a very beautiful song in our Vaishnav songbook. Nandanana Guru can sing better than me. What is that?
Santeho geho jo kichu mo arpilum tu apade nanda kisho.
Right? Mind, body, family, and whatever else may be mine, I have surrendered at your lotus feet, O youthful son of Nanda. In good fortune or in bad, in life or in death, All my difficulties have disappeared by accepting those feet of yours as my only shelter. So, like Prabhupada said, it's the peace formula. Surrendering everything to the feet of Krishna. He's saying mind, body, family, and whatever else I may consider mine, I have surrendered to you. And so all my difficulties have disappeared. That's the peace formula. That's the natural acceptance of the bare facts of reality. That Krishna is the Lord, I am the servant, everything belongs to Krishna. Bhaktivinoda says, slay me or protect me as you wish, for you have full authority over your eternal servant. If it is your wish that I be born again, then may I take birth in the home of your devotee. May I be born again, even as a worm, as long as I remain your devotee. I have no desire to be born as a Brahma, averse to you. I yearn for the company of that devotee who is completely devoid of all desire for worldly enjoyment or liberation. Father, mother, lover, son, lord, preceptor, and husband, you are everything to me. Bhaktivinoda says, O Kana, please hear me. O Lord of Radha, you are my life and soul. So, and there's many more. There's, in this section of Sharanagati, it is the section elucidating on Atmani Vedana, the dedication of the self. Actually, there's so many beautiful songs here. This Manasa Deho Geho is one of these songs. And it is all in this mood, how to give up possessiveness and egoism, how to give up my false sense of being the enjoyer of this world. Like that. So, text 40, with the arrival of autumn, the ocean and the lakes became silent, their water still, just like a sage who has desisted from all material activities and given up his recitation of Vedic mantras. So in the purport it was saying, generally, the general conception of a pious human life is that we do some dharma, some religious activity, not for the purpose of utterly surrendering ourselves to the Lord, but for the purpose of some type of benefit in terms of our material enjoyment. People are doing their religious activities for a better position, more opulence, more material luxuries, or ultimately maybe liberation because the material world is very painful also. So generally people are doing dharma and then doing artha, doing sense gratification or kama, and then at the end of life we should think about moksha. So just like in the rainy season the ocean is very turbulent, the lakes and the ocean will always be turbulent because the rain is coming down. But then it's saying in the autumn, then those large bodies of water, they become more still. Just like the sage, he is giving up this more materialistic type of dharma with ambitions for material elevation. And is vibrating the transcendental glories of the Supreme Lord exclusively. So the waters are becoming more peaceful, and similarly the realized sages, they're giving up their material approach to Vedic knowledge and taking the fully transcendental approach, and in that way they're also becoming more peaceful. That is the analogy that's made there. You can hear something from Srila Prabhupada's Light of the Bhagavat, where he also discusses this. It's a very nice purport. And this is Srila Prabhupada's translation. With the inauguration of the autumn season, the rough sea becomes calm and quiet, just like a philosopher after self-realization who is no longer troubled by the modes of nature. The result of, this is Srila Prabhupada's purport, the result of self-realization is cessation of the storms of desire and lust, which are products of the modes of ignorance and passion. This cessation of the storm does not mean that the sea becomes inactive. When the storm subsides, the work of navigation can take place smoothly. According to the Indian system of navigation, there is a ceremony on the seashore known as the Coconut Day. On the Coconut Day, the sea is offered a coconut because she has become peaceful, and from that day on, the sea-going vessels sail to foreign countries. So we know that when Srila Prabhupada sailed on the Jaladutta, the captain of the ship was saying that it is uncommon how the ocean was so calm during this journey. The three modes of nature divide human activities into two different spheres, one external and the other introspective. As long as a man is dominated by the modes of ignorance and passion, he is active externally in desire and lust. Men absorbed in desire and lust are called asuras, and they are always chasing after women and money. For the sake of women and money, the asuras exploit every source of economic development. As a result of this asuric civilization, the entire human society becomes like a stormy sea with no trace of peace and prosperity. So just like in the Mahabharata, Duryodhana was possessed of this lower nature. He couldn't accept that actually Yudhisthira is elder to me, he is more qualified than me, and so my rightful position is to serve my elder brother and let him be the king, let him be the emperor. And in so many ways, because of his lust, because of his desire for, what was it, for money and women, this is the asuric mentality, then he couldn't reconcile himself to the situation. They tried to poison Bhima with poison his food in his youth. They sent to Varnava, to the house of Lak, to try to kill the Pandavas. Then the kingdom was divided between Duryodhana and his brothers and the Pandavas. And the Pandavas were given the wild jungles full of snakes that were uninhabitable places. And in a very short time, highlighting how qualified the Pandavas were, they made their side of the kingdom more glorious than Hastinapur. And they did the Rajasuya sacrifice, whereupon Yudhisthira became the emperor. And all kinds of... He became the emperor of the world, even more than Hastinapur. Hastinapur became the subservient king to Yudhisthira. And all great personalities came to that Rajasuya sacrifice, and Lord Krishna was honored as the topmost person there. And then, like Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, they had a very incredible palace constructed by Maya Danava. And Duryodhan couldn't understand some of the difference between the ponds and the regular floor because it was some incredible illusory arrangement. And he fell into the water, and the women of the palace, they laughed at him. And he became so envious. How can they laugh at me? How can these Pandavas have a greater kingdom than me? I should be the king. And so he made the gambling match. And he cheated the Pandavas, and he insulted Draupadi. This is all lust. This is all envy. And finally, they came to war. So what did Prabhupada say? As a result of this asuric civilization, the entire human society becomes like a stormy sea with no trace of peace and prosperity. So that was the situation. That's the story of the Mahabharata. because of this historic mentality, the whole situation was disturbed. They had a very horrible war. Time is going. Too much of an external view of the world gives rise to an overly large scale and difficult type of industry and trade known as ugra karma. The word ugra means hard or difficult, and karma means task. The development of hard and difficult industrial undertakings always hinders the progressive cultivation of the human spirit. Asuric leaders of society never retire from such lustful undertakings unless killed by the laws of nature. For them, there is no question of retirement or of cultivating the human spirit. But men in the mode of goodness have an introspective mind, and after a regulative struggle for existence, they retire at a ripe old age and engage their time in cultivating the human spirit. Anyway, it goes on. But this is the point that is made here in the verse. Just as the ocean and the lakes, they become still and silent. That is compared to the saintly people who give up their asuric mentality, the asuric desire for material sense gratification, and they more and more cultivate the sattvic, pure desire for self-realization. So we should say a few words also. Today is the disappearance of Sri Shyamananda Prabhu. I'll try to say a few things from memory. Please forgive me for reading so much. I'm still very jet-lagged. I just returned from foreign travel. It's very difficult to sleep at night. It's very difficult to stay awake in the day. Bhuvaneshwar Prabhu used to always tell me that Srila Prabhupada never had jet lag. But somehow I'm suffering from it so much. So Sri Shyamananda Prabhu was born in a place called Utkal, and his father's name was Sri Krishna Mandal and mother's name Sri Durika, and they came in a line of the six Gopas. And this Sri Krishna Mandal, he had fathered many children, many sons and daughters, before the birth of Shyamananda Prabhu. But many of those children died. And that was a great tragedy for the family. There was a lot of sadness in the family. And so when he was born, he was given the name Duki, which means, right? It means like sad, someone who is suffering. So he was given the name Duki, and many people thought he will be a very great personality. People were saying like that. He will become a Mahapurush. And from his childhood, he was seen to manifest many very extraordinary qualities. He was very beautiful. Everyone found him very charming and handsome to look at. And he was very brilliant and intelligent. He did very, very well in his schooling. And by his association with local devotees, he became inspired to worship Gornitai. And his father suggested, you should take mantra initiation. And so when his father suggested like that, then Duki said, my guru is living in a place called Ambika Kalna, and his name is Hridoy Chaitanya Prabhu. That is my guru, he told his father. And his father said, but that place is very far away. How will you ever go there? And so Duki said, many times there are pilgrims, they're going to the Ganga, and so sometime I can move with those pilgrims. And so his father took a long time to think about that and finally agreed, okay, you can go. And so he met this Hridoy Chaitanya Prabhu. And Hridoy Chaitanya Prabhu also was so pleased to see such a qualified young person, so devotional, so sincere, and so genius and intelligent. And so he, on an auspicious day, he initiated Duki, and gave him the name Krishnadas.
So he became known as Duki Krishnadas. And seeing how qualified Duki Krishnadas was, he decided, there's a great scholar in Vrindavan, Jiva Goswami. He decided we should send you there and you should study under Jiva Goswami. So he went to Vrindavan, and at that time also there were the very famous and important acharyas, Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya. And so those three, they studied like very close brothers under the guidance of Jiva Goswami, and they learned all the shastras under the expert guidance of Jiva Goswami. And then the very important story is there, maybe you all know. He had asked for some service to Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami gave him the service of drawing water from a certain kund every day. What is the name of that kund? Kananakunj. So every day Duki Krishnadas would draw water from that kunj and felt great devotional happiness and inspiration doing that seva. And one day, in the bottom of his bucket that he drew the water from, he found a bangle, and he was very surprised. Oh, who does this bangle belong to? And he was thinking, I should search out, who does this belong to? This is like a very extraordinary bangle. It is not just a simple plastic bangle. It is something, something of a much higher quality. So at the same time, there is a description that Radharani was meeting with her girlfriends, and they noticed that one of her bangles on her left leg was missing. And, oh, what happened? Radharani said, last night I was dancing with Krishna, I think this bangle must have fallen off. So she sent Vishakha Devi, please go to this place, I think you might find the bangle there. So Vishakha came and met Duki Krishnadas and asked if he had found any bangle. So he showed the bangle to the very effulgent Vishakha, and she said, thank you so much that you have returned this very valuable bangle to us. I'm sure that my friend will want to give you any benediction that you like. And so he said, actually, I don't want anything. I just want your mercy, your blessing. So Vishakha Devi said, you please take bath in this kund. So when Duki Krishnadas took his bath, he took the spiritual form of a gopi. And then Vishakha took that gopi to meet Radharani. And she was very pleased and wanted to reciprocate. And so I think with some kunkum and with that bangle, made a tilak on his forehead or on her forehead, and said, from now on, you will be known as Shamananda, and you should always wear this tilak. So Shamananda, he following Radharani, he wore that tilak, and the Vaishnavs began to discuss, oh, how has this person changed his tilak, right? If someone in our temple, they dramatically changed their tilak, and they changed their name, we would think, what did he do? He went outside, or what happened? So people started discussing like this, and the news got back to Hridoy Chaitanya. And Hridoy Chaitanya became disturbed, and he thought, immediately I should go to Vrindavan. And when he came to Vrindavan and he saw how his disciple is going with a new name and has a new tilak, he became very angry, and he severely chastised his disciple, which is the right as his guru. And it says that Shamananda Prabhu, he very humbly accepted this chastisement from his guru. He didn't think, I should correct my guru. But he had faith that everything will be corrected. This was given to me by Radharani. I have to follow what Radharani said. But also my guru is chastising me. I have to accept that chastisement. So later in a dream, Radharani came to Hridoy Chaitanya and she chastised the Guru, Hridoy Chaitanya, and said, you should not chastise Shyamananda, it is I that gave him this new name and gave him this tilak. So Hridoy Chaitanya, he very humbly came back to his disciple and gave his respects and apologies, and so there was a reconciliation. So that story is very important. Also Shyamananda Prabhu, he went out for preaching after they became qualified under Jiva Goswami. He went out for preaching and he made many important disciples. He participated in the Ketari festival of Narottam Das Thakur. We can just read a few comments at the end. Sri Shyamananda Prabhu was invited to the famous festival in Ketari Gram, the birthplace of Narottam Das Thakur. After getting this invitation, Shyamananda Prabhu, along with his disciples, set off in the direction of Ketari Gram. After arriving in Ketari Gram, he found his old lifelong friends, Narottam and Srinivasacharya. Heartily embracing one another, they floated in the waves of happiness. As a result of the influence of Shyamananda Prabhu, the constant worship and service of Gaur and Nityananda was established far and wide. Rasikananda, Sri Murari, Radhananda, Purushottam, Manohar, Chintamani, Balabhadra, Sri Jagadvar, Gadadhar, Anandananda, and Sri Radha Mohan and others were the dearmost confidential disciples of Shyamananda Prabhu. Srila Shyamananda Prabhu, having been successful in his many preaching campaigns, returned to Sri Gopi Vallapur, and there, after some days, a big festival took place. After that, in the month of Ashar, on the day of Krishna Pratipad, the great Acharya Shyamananda Prabhu entered into the eternal Leela of the Lord. His samadhi may be found in Gopi Vallapur, where the service of his deity goes on to this day. So please forgive me for going over time. Is there any moment for a question or comment? Yes, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu.
What is the sign of arrival of autumn or a coconut day in devotee's life? What is the sign of arrival of autumn or coconut day in devotee's life?
Wow.
When can a devotee
when is this the sign of the arrival of the coconut day, meaning when the seas will become peaceful? I think maybe one could answer this question in different ways. We know that there are the stages in devotional development from Shraddha to Prema, and each of those stages may mark maybe getting closer to that coconut day. By Nishta, maybe 75% anarthas are removed, I think Srila Prabhupada has said. It means then one should be fixed, be strong in their devotional practice. From Ruchi, there should be some greater sense of attraction to the eternal service of the Lord. And from Asakti, there should be even more, some specific realization how one will serve the Lord. And from Bhava, but of course, so from those higher stages, yes, that can, you can call that maybe like as the coconut day. From Asakti forward, then the mind should be as one's friend. It may still be possible that there will be some disturbances. Even at Bhava, there can be some disturbances. And at Prema, then there will be no more disturbances. Is that okay, Prabhu? Maybe we will leave it there. Thank you, everyone, for your kind attention. Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.